Disclaimer: the views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Justin's here.
Howdy.
And obviously up front, we've got some news to talk about. This news that dropped the same day as our previous podcast where we talked about the other weird, strange, bad news. The whole Bandai and Media Blaster shutting down thing. But then there was new news. So Justin, why don't you give us a rundown?
Well, the two arguably biggest anime companies that are remaining in America, Funimation and ADV, are suing each other.
Right.
Mostly Funimation suing ADV and then ADV and the pile of companies that they turned into filed a countersuit that isn't really really isn't much of a countersuit. It's more just, you know, asking for the court to decide things definitively.
Yeah, it's a no fuck you. Yeah,
exactly. The gist of the suit is that Funimation, when they inherited all those titles that ADV lost a few years ago,
they apparently also
assumed the $8 million that ADV owed the Japanese company Sojitz.
Pretty sweet contract for Sojitz.
Yeah, I can imagine. And, you know, maybe Funimation, I don't know whether Funimation thought they were going to collect on that or not. But regardless, they want to now, and they claim that contractually that it's owed to them, that they're officially a creditor now that that deal, you know, they basically just assumed that debt. Mm-hmm. ADV, for their part, claims that A, it's passed a statute of limitations, it's B, their contract's not with Funimation, and Funimation doesn't have any direct damages. They have a few lines of defense. And what's funny about this is that I read all of the legal briefings, all of them, mm-hmm. in their entirety, cover to cover. Mm-hmm. I can't tell what the hell is going on. There is no data. There is no this is just the complaints. So we have no idea what the evidence is, what the you know, none of us are legal scholars, and that's what it's going to take for this sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the internet blew up as expected.
Right.
That's just going to happen. And then, okay, fine. We all can expect that. This is one of those cases where, based on my understanding, they're trying to collect a debt. Based on what I've read, it looks like the strongest arrow in ADV's quiver, or John Ledford's quiver, is the fact that it seems pretty cut and dry that they filed this after the statute of limitations was up. But who knows? You know, that'll come up in the court case. They requested a jury trial, and they don't even start the preliminary things for that until October.
Yeah, this is going to drag on for a long time. And, you know, the funny thing is we've all seen a lot of fake court cases on TV.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of us are really it's hard to remember just how slow and not dramatic at all a lawsuit really is.
Yeah. I mean, best case scenario, this somehow gets settled before they take it to court. I don't know what that would entail. I don't think that's going to happen because it would require money leaving ADV and going to Funimation, which I just can't see that happening.
No.
Unless a judge tells them to do it.
No. There is no love lost between these companies. I mean, that's well known.
Yeah, it's pretty well known.
The personalities, I mean, even decades ago, a decade ago, it was clear that the personalities and the people involved in the anime business are a catty bunch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm frankly shocked that it took this long for there to be a lawsuit between them.
Yeah, you know, a lot of type A personalities, button heads and stuff like that. And, you know, over the years, we've heard all these stories of, you know, either company having one grievance or another against the way the other one is doing business and that kind of thing. You know, there's a litany of stuff like that. You know, nothing we'll go into any great detail on, but they don't like each other. So,
right. I mean, that's why that that's why there have been the history of the anime business in the States is just littered with the corpses of opportunities where working together made sense. You know, even things like Anime Network, which ADV tried for years to get other companies on board with. No.
Yeah.
the only Sweden in all this is Right Stuff.
Right. Yeah, otherwise, you know, it's competitive just like any other business. And so now, you know, Funimation's like, well, we want our $8 million. I have to admit, skeptical that they have $8 million. I'm pretty sure they don't. You know, I don't know. I have not seen their books or anything, but I'm just going to assume they don't have $8 million. We don't know how this is going to come down. We don't know what the impact of this will be. It's way too early to tell. It's way too early. Nobody does. It's too early to speculate. And, you know, frankly, no one knows enough about this unless they can prove to you that they're a lawyer.
Even if they are a lawyer, they haven't seen any of the contracts.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, no one knows anything. This is the kind of thing where it's like, okay, well, that's kind of a bummer. Wonder where that'll go. That's where you have to leave it.
It is a bummer because this is going to be expensive for both sides, and we'd all rather those went to anime licenses.
Yeah, that's money that we would all rather be seeing spent on something other than the legal system. But, you know, this is what they chose to do. Feel how you feel about it. But, you know, trying to get a definitive answer saying this is what will happen is a waste of time. We don't know what's going to happen at all. No one knows, especially not, I don't know, bloggers and internet forum commenters and pundits like us that are not lawyers. And, you know, don't let anyone definitively tell you exactly what's going to happen with this because no one knows.
And the forums have been full of those people. And even like some very prominent people have been full of opinion and wrath about this. I don't even know whether to cast aspersions about filing this in the first place. I know if I thought I was owed $8 million, I would sure want it.
You try to get it. It's business. Like, I understand the whole, like, oh, we should all, you know, the industry's in trouble. This could have come at a better time. You know, before Bandai and Media Blasters or whatever. And I think that reaction that you're seeing where it's like, oh, why are they even, they shouldn't even want that $8 million. They should not even be trying to collect it. It's like, yeah, I understand, you know, the industry's having trouble and things aren't great right now. And we're all dealing with some bad news. And this is just more unsettling news on top of bad news. And no one wants to hear it right now. But it's business. It's money. It's not, we're all friends and buddies and this is a charity and let's all help each other out. These are rivals. These two companies are rivals.
And they not the going... Shonen Jump homoerotic kind of rivalry either.
Yeah, no. And they are fighting over money, which is what rival companies do. So, you know, I guess there's, I really don't understand the whole, like, why can't everyone be friends? Yeah. Cause they're not, it's not how business works. So I guess that's sort of what we have to say on that. It's just too early to say anything.
Yeah. Which won't stop anyone.
No. We could try, though.
We will fail. I'm predicting that right now. We will fail.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, if that's all, then I guess we should go ahead and get on to the next segment. We'll have a gay old time. Okay, we're back. My guests this week are, assistant editor, and everybody knows Bamboo. Bamboo Dong is here.
Hello, everyone.
And a longtime critic for the site. He's been on the show like once before, years ago, I think, but Theron Martin has joined us. Hey, Theron.
Pleased to meet you all.
Thanks a lot for coming on. So, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about reviews. Everybody here writes reviews, you know, sometimes under, you know, stressful situations and painful situations. But before we really get in, and obviously we're sort of the preview guide for winter is over as of today, and so I kind of want to get your thoughts on that. But before we get in on that, aside from the winter 2012 shows, have you been watching anything else lately? And I guess we'll start with Bamboo.
Yeah, I have. And actually, anyone who follows my Twitter knows that I am obsessed with this title called Chihayafuru, and that actually started simulcasting last season. And thankfully, it's continuing this season because it's like my favorite show in the entire world. It's amazing. Have you watched it yet?
Okay, I just watched 8 episodes of that.
What, did you love it?
I would not say that I loved it like as much as you or a lot of the people on Twitter seem to really be head over heels in love with it, but it is very cute and very entertaining, and I really like the characters. Yeah. I'm curious to see where it goes. However, I'm on episode 8, and you guys are talking about these huge emotional moments, and maybe I'm not there yet, but it's cute, yeah. And it's cute, and I feel I care about these characters and everything, but I haven't been, like, on the verge of tears yet. It's good. It's really good. Like, it's a quality show, and the characters are really strong. Like, really well written.
I think around episode 12 is where, like, the waterworks just, like, opened up and flooded out of my eyes. So, well, episode so people, 12, Zach, if you don't cry in that episode, you are made of steel.
I'm pretty easy, Mark, when it comes to that kind of thing. But just so people know, I mean, what's the show about?
So, the show is about this high school girl named Chihaya. And she and her friends actually are really into this, it's kind of like a flashcard game called Karuta. And the idea is that in Japan, they have this compendium of poems called the 100 Poets. And it's essentially a flashcard game. So basically, you lay out the cards in front of you, and then somebody reads the beginning of the poem. And by the time, like, you figure out what the last half of that poem is, you have to, like, take that card. So it's like, I don't even know what to compare it to in America, because we don't really have, like, a comparison. You know, it's like...
No.
It's yeah. like Slapjack plus memory, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah, the game is very Japanese.
Yeah.
To the point where I think it's never going to get a DVD release here. We're very lucky it's streaming on Crunchyroll. But, you know, that's sort of that's the game. And around this game is this very sort of outgoing and strong-willed girl, Chihaya, who gets involved with it, and there's sort of a little bit of a love triangle sort of forming between her, and it starts, I mean, the first, like, three episodes are flashbacks to her childhood in elementary school when she first got into this game, and she meets a, you know, sort of a star athlete who's also really smart, who gets into it with her, and then there's the nerdy sort of walled-off kid who's really, really good at it. Because his grandfather's like the grandmaster champion of this game in Japan. And he's really, really good at it, but he's also really kind of a weirdo and really sort of walled off and quiet. And he sort of looks like the anime version of Simon from Alvin and the Chipmunks. So there's sort of a little bit, you know, it starts in their childhood and then they get split up by middle school. I don't think they get split up by, you know, they get split up by middle school and then it seems like they're reconvening in high school.
Right.
And that's where the show sort of picks up, where she starts, a karuta club in high school, and she has to gather five members. In the last episode I saw, she just got Meat Bun Coon.
Right.
And they just now have their five members assembled, and they can finally get a sponsor for their club. And the star of the show is the character interaction. And the way the characters are written, you can't help but cheer for them. Like, it's really hard to not feel good watching these characters, and you kind of just, it's a very comforting show. Like, it's good to sit there and just sort of watch it and relax with it, and it's very, yeah, and it's not like anything else that continues to get produced. I mean, I could see this show have been, you know, having been made 10 years ago or whatever, but it's an anomaly now for sure, I think.
What I love about the show, and, you know, and I have to say up front that it's one of those shows that it's really hard to describe the premise without making it sound really dumb. Like,
Oh,
it's about these high school kids who play a card game. Like, it sounds really dumb. But, like, what's so great about the series is that it's so, like, uncynical. And that's one of the things I love it, because I feel like so many TV shows, movies, everything now, like, it's everything's so cynical. Like, you can't like something unless it's ironic. You can't, you know, like, everything has such a snarky edge to it. Where I feel like you have a show like this where it's, the characters are all likable. You know, all their interactions are really genuine. Nobody's backstabbing anyone else. Like, it's just a really likable show. And the main character, Chihaya, one of the reasons I love her so much is that, so her older sister is like this up-and-coming model. And the entire series, people are always talking about how gorgeous, like, her model sister is and, like, all this stuff. But, like, Chihaya, like, she doesn't – it doesn't faze her. She is happy for her sister's success. When people tease her, she doesn't care. Like, she's just a really happy person. And that is so hard to find these days.
Yeah, well, a character like that for sure. And what, you know, the thing that occurred to me, like, the easiest way to describe the show is, like, good-hearted. Like, it has a really good heart to it. And, you know, to that end, I did notice that the music's really good. And the music reminds me a lot, for some reason, in a lot of the episodes, feels like whenever there's a big, like, upswell or emotional thing happening, the music gets very, like, Disney-ish. Because there's these sweeping harps and these swelling violins, and it all feels very, like, kind of Disney-ish, like a Disney fairy tale movie or something.
Oh, but it makes your heart soar.
Yeah, it's good. It's really good. It's a really quality show. And, you know, it's become sort of a critical favorite. I assume it's not setting the internet on fire or anything.
No, probably not.
Just among, you know, those of us that have been watching this stuff for way too long. But, yeah, no, it's super quality. I really look forward to watching it more. And once I catch up, I'll probably watch it week to week. But yeah, super. Like, I'd give it an A. I really am enjoying it a lot so far. Although I haven't gotten to the super. I guess that I've gotten to the super emotional stuff. I assume it has something to do with her friend coming back, because that did kind of bother me. Where, you know, the super smart kid who's really good at it, basically leaves before high school, and they sort of track him down. And there's this big moment where, anyway, it's an emotionally involving episode, and he sort of runs after them as they're getting on the train to leave his town in this sort of moment of, oh, I realize I do totally want to come back and be with you guys. And then he is not mentioned again for the next, like, two episodes. Oh, I'm sure. But it's just like suddenly they have this big emotional moment. Next episode, well, that didn't seem to have happened. Like, it's a little bit.
I look forward to your tears is all I'm saying.
All right. Theron, have you watched any of this?
I saw the first couple episodes of it, and I thought it was a really good-looking show at that point, but I only really have time to follow about three or four new series a season, so that one just didn't quite make the cut for me.
Didn't make the cut, yeah. I could see that. I mean, you know, it's better to have a bunch of them to watch at once, but I will say, like, this thing has no chance at getting a DVD release here, so if you want to watch it, go watch it right now, because who knows how long Crunchyroll is going to have that up. Who knows how long that contract is going to last. The show's ongoing. You can catch up with it over a weekend, and it'll be fine. If you're interested in it, check it out, because this is one of those that's likely, I would say it's a 90% chance, going to be streaming only. So, yeah. And I think the density of that game, because even as they're describing it, and I'm 8 episodes in, I really don't know how you play it. I really don't understand how you play that game, and all the rules are really complicated. I know it's considered
not that complicated.
It's considered kind of a children's game in Japan, and which is kind of why they have, you know, they go through this hardship of everyone sort of dismisses it as not really a competitive thing, but it totally is. And yeah, I don't know. The game, I think it's not as simple as like Go, right?
Right.
It's not as translatable as Go. Well, because, you know, it occurred to me, like, the first thing to compare it to is, like, oh, did you like Hikaru no Go? You should give this a shot.
Right.
The two shows are wildly different in their execution, but they both center around a really Japanese game, so I don't know. Yeah, like I said, there's nothing to really compare it to.
Right. I mean, unless you want to play, like, competitive Uno.
Yeah.
Or something.
I'm sure there's a manga out there. About
no,
it.
Yeah.
That probably exists. So it appears we watched the same thing. Theron, did you watch anything besides the winter shows?
Well, I am still watching Shakugan no Shana third season. I've been a fan of the first two, so I kind of felt compelled to check that one out. And it's been pretty decent so far, so I'll probably watch it out to the end.
How long is that? Because you reviewed like the first 12 on the site. Is that going to be a 23 or 26 or something?
I believe it's scheduled to be a 24. I know it's a full, what we would call a full season.
Right.
And again, it's supposed to be the final part. So presumably this will be it for the franchise, but.
Yeah. Not if it makes a lot
of
money.
it's definitely kind of building up towards something really major, because there's definitely a grander scope of battles in this one than what you've seen in any of the previous series, because the second series kind of got bogged down all this high school love triangle stuff, but there's been none of that basically in this third series. It's been almost an entire action focus, so it's in one, in a sense, it's been kind of of an uptick on that. It's also a series that, well, it's already licensed, but I still find it kind of curious that that series is available, but yet the second Shakugan no Sauna series isn't, which is kind of a total link between the first and the third series. So it's kind of one of those odd little quirks in the licensing and availability scheme in the United States.
Yeah, that's kind of weird, especially because I believe that got... No, that was Familiar of Zero that got picked up. Like, the fourth season got picked up for DVD mm-hmm. for some reason, and, like, the first three are, like, way out of print. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's another one of those quirks. That's a long time in between. Now, that series has been produced for a while.
Yeah, kind of I think there was, like... Oh, shoot. Offhand, I want to say there was about a three-year gap since the last OVAs that followed the second series. So it's been a pretty substantial gap. And considering that the second series kind of ended on a major cliffhanger, that was kind of upset fans for a long time. It was labeled as one of the most want to see more kind of series for like a couple of years in a row there.
Right. So have the fans come back to it? I mean, obviously you did.
I did. I can't imagine the fans not coming back to it because, again, it's got all of the classic elements and it dumps the whole we're focusing on this love triangle and all this normal mundane school stuff business that's really was kind of the big negative and especially the second series and to a lesser extent the first series. So I really hope fans will come back for it because I think they're in for a treat if they do.
So you're enjoying it so far?
Yeah, pretty much. I wouldn't say it's a top-rate show because the technical merits aren't quite as sharp as you would hope they would be, but it's a definitely a watchable show.
Huh. Interesting. Well, so and those first two seasons are what? Those are full seasons, right? Like 24.
Yeah, those are both 24 episode seasons.
So you're looking at
there's
75.
Like a three, I think 4 episode OVA that's mostly some side stories.
So if you were to start at the beginning, there's a lot to consume.
Oh yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even try to watch the third series without having seen the first two. Just there's just so much you would not understand about what's going on.
Right. Yeah, bad idea. Okay, well that's cool. Obviously, the other thing I watched is Redline for the like 12th time or something. Reviews up on the site now. I won't go into it. Except I don't think either of you have seen that yet, have you?
I have seen it actually.
Oh, all right. What did you think of it?
I mean, it's so fun. Like, it's really exciting. I don't know. Like everything that could possibly be said about Redline has already been said like a million places and, you know. But, like, I just had so much fun. And, like, the three of us watch so much anime now that, like, it's really rare to see something you're like, oh, what? Like, I'm really enjoying myself, you know. Yeah. And Redline was one of those films for me.
Yeah, that's why I embraced it like I did. Because if I don't see,
I guess I'm going to have to see this at some point now. Since everybody's been raving about it, I'm still waiting my opportunity on that.
Yeah, it's that is one thing that I have learned over time, and we'll get into that in a little bit when we talk about reviews in general. Is embrace when you're excited about something. Don't slough off the enthusiasm because those are the moments that keep you going. You know.
Oh, absolutely.
But so let's talk about Winter 2012 because we just finished this. And I got to say, one of the weakest seasons in recent memory.
Well, it's one of the shortest ones in recent memory, too, I think.
Yeah, we extended the preview guide by like 5 days just to get some episode twos in there because it was slim pickings.
Yeah, there just aren't that many series this year. I mean, the volume is one of the lowest that I can remember, even for a winter season.
Well, I counted, and there were 20 shows. Three of those were five-minute episode shows, which I don't really count, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And of those, most of them were sequels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's an awful lot of sequels this season, proportionally speaking.
Right, and it's sequels to stuff where if you didn't watch the first season, forget it. Like, you're going to be totally lost. There's a Niso Isin or whatever show in there, Nisei Monogatari. I'm not even going to touch that without having at least considered watching the first season of that. It's like, just knowing the way that guy writes dialogue. So I guess we could start with your favorites. Theron and I think maybe had probably the same one. But Bamboo, what was your favorite? What was the best thing you saw from the season?
I mean, I think we might all actually be in agreement that Bodacious Space Pirates is actually, right now, to me, is one of my favorites.
Yeah, well, it's kind of hard not to, because that's clearly the best show of the season.
Yeah.
Oh, I think without question.
Yeah. I don't know what else you would say.
It's one of the only well-written shows this season, actually. I mean, if you take a show like Bodacious Spades Pirates and you compare that to the other mech series this season, that Lagrange, Flower of Rene, or whatever, I mean, it's night and day. Like, they both have robots and they both have like a happy, kawaii, ganky girl, but they're completely different series. One of them has good writing and the other one is just like slop.
Weird, because they're directed by the same guy.
Totally different.
Yeah, that kind of threw me, because it's like, wait a minute. I guess you put your good screenwriters on the other show.
The thing that gets me about the Audacious Space Pirates, I've seen a fair number of people comment in some of the response threads about, oh, this is just so slow paced. When is it going to get to the action and stuff? And I kind of look at those posts and say, like, what? I mean, really? We actually have a series that's bothering to develop the characters and not just shoehorn her into her destined position right away, and you don't want to sit around and enjoy that fact?
Or more commonly, the show starts with her in her destined position and there's a 15-minute info dump that explains everything that happened in the last 10 years of her life with one person talking, and they cut to various consoles and stuff throughout this 15-minute speech. This is actually pretty well written for a TV show. And I saw that too, where they were complaining about the lack of action, and it's like, all right, well, there's just no fucking pleasing you. Like, you can't be pleased. That was sort of my attitude. How can you not recognize that this is well written, I guess? I don't know.
Yeah, and I actually find series like Bodacious Space Pirates, I find them less boring because I am involved in the characters, whereas, like, Lagrange bores me to tears. Like, I just could not possibly care about you know, the adventures of this girl and her robot that she mysteriously knows how to pilot, you know, and she's just thrown into the world. It's so hacky. Like, we've seen this show a million times. Yeah. It's not interesting.
Well, let's be honest, too. Bodacious Space Prize is a much better looking series, too.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a lot more. Just overall, the aesthetic of it is a lot more attractive, and they make sure to develop all these characters and show you kind of their motivation. And none of them are they. And here's the big thing: none of them seem like immediate, out of the box, two dimensional stereotype, like archetype characters. They seem like they're trying to give them depth. It's not just girl with glasses who wears short skirts and she's smart, and that's it. Like, there's more to that character. There's a lot more to the main character. They're clearly showing you who this person is. And it's rare. And, you know, the show really has, really stinks of Nedesco, which, again, same character, same director, so that's where that tone is coming in. But that's a really specific tone. It's this really thin tightrope walk between sort of drama, comedy, action, adventure that's really hard to walk. And he does it really well. He did it really well in Nedesco, and it seems, I've only seen two episodes so far. There's more coming on Saturday, but it seems like he's doing that here, and that excites me. Like, I hope he maintains that tone.
Well, basically, you could kind of look at this as a more moderated version of Nedesco, couldn't you? I mean, because Nedesco was always kind of this over-the-top, frenetic series, whereas this one's clearly trying to be more reasonable.
Well, Nedesco was satire. For a big chunk of it was satire,
and this one's at least playing itself at least semi-serious.
It's serious. It's lighthearted, but it's not parody or satire. It's not a joke. It's just,
exactly.
It just happens to be lighthearted, which is what I want.
I did laugh in the scene in the last episode where the main character is like sits down and is like, I want to try hacking too. Like, there's this whole thing about how, like, there's some ship that's also docked in the same, like, I don't know, whatever they dock spaceships in. But that's trying to, like, hack into their ship. And then the main character just has a moment where she's like, oh, yeah, electronic warfare, I'm going to do this. And it made me laugh because, like, and this is a weird reference, but do you remember in Jurassic Park?
Uh-huh, yeah.
When one of the kids is like, what do you do? He's like, I'm a hacker. Like, that's kind of what it reminded me of.
Yep.
So, like, that was the one scene where I was like, oh, this is a little weird. But, like, I mean, you know, went with the flow. I mean, it's still a really great show. Although some of the forum comments I've seen or read complaining about it are really weird. Like, there was someone who was really bothered by the fact that the girls' skirts, like, didn't fly around because they were in zero gravity.
I don't know what it is with that. There's a habit, I don't know what it is, where they want to nitpick it to death. And, you know, that kind of stuff generally doesn't bother me. I'm not the kind of guy that watches Star Trek and goes, well, if I don't understand why they were able to use that sort of, you know, crystal on the engine when they had this. It's like, shut the fuck up. It's science fiction.
I mean, like, yeah, there's a certain amount that you just kind of have to go with the flow on stuff like this, especially with anime.
Yeah, like, a lot of these are the same people that get upset when we criticize dumb fan service crap. So, yeah. It's clearly like, I'm going to defend this junk to the death, but the minute you say you like something, I'm going to just pick it to pieces. Fine, well, whatever, I don't care. I don't care about the forum comments. So.
And maybe I'm happy that the skirts aren't flying around, otherwise we would end up with the show with like a face full of ass every 5 minutes.
Well, exactly. I mean, as much as I like my fan service, this is one series that I don't feel would be appropriate, so I'm kind of enjoying the fact that it doesn't happen.
Yeah, it would feel really inappropriate, and it would be a giant distraction, and they would have to accommodate it in the writing, which means the writing would suffer. So, yeah, I don't know. But Ace of Space Pirates, if you haven't heard our gushing elsewhere, you've just heard it again, and so go watch that show. Other decent stuff, I was okay with Night in the Area, although I did not watch any more of it. There's a big plot twist at the end of the second episode that I believe was telegraphed pretty much from the first episode. And yeah. The fact that the Big Brother character isn't in any of the promotional art should tip you off as to what happens. Did you watch the second episode, Bamboo?
I did. And actually, it's way better than the first episode. I was actually kind of blasé about the first one. But the second one, like, it's really a lot more emotional.
Yeah.
Which I think, like, steers it in a good direction. The first episode I thought was just kind of all over the place. Like, bam, childhood character, bam, soccer, bam, mysterious mass figure. Like, they're trying too hard to set things up. But episode two, especially when that, you know, when the plot twist hits, it's pretty powerful.
I don't know. I think my problem with the series is that I'm kind of spoiled by Cross Game. I keep trying to compare the series to that. It just doesn't stack up too well.
Well, Cross Game is widely considered a masterpiece, so... I don't know. This is kind of a relatively, you know, somewhat popular soccer mm-hmm. manga that got, you know, turned.
Oh, I perfectly understand. It's not a fair comparison, but I just can't get out of that mindset with that show. So that's probably not going to be one I'm going to be following. Besides, I don't give two hoots about soccer, anyways.
There you go.
Aww.
That makes me sad. Yeah. Those are the only two shows I gave decent ratings to. Everything else, I was totally bleh on. And I didn't watch any sequels at all. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of the sequels, I think the only one you watched was... you watched one of them, wasn't it, Theron?
Well, I just don't remember. I know there was one of them that I watched.
Hang on. It was Amagami. Yeah, that was the one.
Oh, Amagami SS, yes. I still haven't gotten around to watching the second episode of that one to kind of finish out that initial arc. But it looks like it's at least trying to add some... conflict into it, which even though I kind of like the first series, that's mainly what the first series lacked. That was the big criticism against the first series. There wasn't much conflict in it. And now the second series starts right off with some major conflicts. So it was okay. I don't know if I'm going to follow that one though, because again, with a couple of series carrying over from the fall, I have only a very limited number of new ones I can pick up. One I was really impressed by, but I don't know if I'm going to continue to watch it, was The Daily Lives of High School Boys. Funniest thing I've seen in quite a while.
Everyone said that. I did not watch it.
Neither did I.
Oh, it's some of the little skits they do. Like, they have, like, there's the classic scene that I think was started by Rei Ayanami of the student running out of the house late with a piece of toast in their mouth. And then they do a parody of that, where they have the guy with the piece of toast hanging out of his mouth, but the other two guys have, like, dishes of food that they're carrying along, and they're eating as they're running along, too. And so they kind of play around with some of the anime stereotypes there, but then they also take some of the just normal stuff about, like, middle school boys screwing around when they're bored, and some of what they do with that is so tremendously funny.
Yeah, I am a little surprised that didn't get picked up for streaming. I wish it would, or wish it did. It seems like everybody seems to be talking about how hilarious it is. I guess, I don't know, maybe they didn't, no. Nobody was interested in it, or the rights were weird, or somebody had it that didn't want to give it up for streaming, I don't know.
But, well, the series that was like that last season was Bento. I mean, Bento is a wonderfully entertaining series. That's still, and I put it on my list for the end of the year awards as the unlicensed gem for 2011. It still shocks me that nobody's picked that one up.
Hmm. Well, I guess there's always got to be one. Yeah, but in terms of the worst, I guess I would have to give the worst to High School DxD, I guess.
I forgot about that show.
Licensed, though, didn't it?
Yeah, of course it did.
Yeah.
Just today, I think, as I say this?
Yeah, it got licensed today, Wednesday. And, well, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, they can put boobs on the cover, and they'll sell a lot. Those shows do really, really well for Funimation.
One that I think has picked up a lot with the second episode, and I know a lot of us trashed it the first episode of it, but Listen to Me, Girls, I'm Your Father. I mean, almost everybody trashed the first episode of that, but I think the second episode really picked things up majorly, enough so that I might actually continue to watch that one.
The last 30 seconds of the show picked up. The first 22 minutes and 30 seconds was like me screaming at my screen, telling the girl to not fuck her uncle. Like, I don't know. There's so many things about that show. Like, there's parts of the premise I want to like it, but the way that they animate the show really creeps me out. Like, I don't know, you know, why everyone has to be so shiny and nubby and wearing see-through shirts. It's just really weird.
It didn't occur to me. Since you phrased that way, it occurred to me that I guess at some point someone will do an anime music video of Listen to Me, Girls, I'm Your Father to Uncle Fucker from the South Park movie. I'm sure that will happen at some
point.
Yeah, not going to watch another episode of that. Don't care. Know exactly who they're trying to appeal to with it. Not my kind of thing. I don't find the situation to be funny or anything. It is a sitcom I don't want to watch. So there you go. And I mean, I know, Theron, you're like, well, it picks up. And like, you're way more forgiving of this kind of thing than I think either Bamboo or I are. They're more open to it anyway.
I mean, once you get to the series premise, like the last 30 seconds of the show, it's like, oh, man, like maybe this does pick up. But that's also because it provokes such like a ingrained, like, knee-jerk, heartbreaking reaction in viewers that you're like, oh, well, maybe the show is good because tragedy strikes. But, like, that doesn't forgive it for the fact that, like, you know, the first half of the episode is this girl who's, like, just really excited that her step-uncle's going to visit and takes a shower twice and runs around, like, it's weird.
Oh, I understand what you're saying about that, and I must admit there's some certain aspects of the fan service that they work into that even I find a bit on the creepy side, and I wish they weren't doing. But I still saw enough in that second episode to that intrigue me about where they might go with this. And if they end up going back to just making it something fairly trashy from this point out, then I might not finish watching it. But I'm going to at least give it a chance and see if it at least tries to do something different there. I thought Astaroth's Toy was going to do that for a while, but then it kind of went back to its trashy nature in the end, so.
Was that the show where there was like a 12-year-old, like, what was it?
Oh, she wasn't even 12.
Succubus or something? It was something weird, right? And then she had to, like, fellate men for power?
The premise of that show is that she had to suck dick to live.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
That's how I
would
that was
always, that was kind of the implication, but they never actually said that.
Excuse me. Oh, that's not quite what she had to do. Oh, well, then. Totally going to watch that.
You didn't have to swallow. Jesus.
God. Jesus. Hey. No, I mean, you know, shows like that, like,
it wasn't
watched.
Quite that bad, but it didn't end up being that good in the end either. So I kind of, my opinion kind of went on a downturn on that show or the second half.
Oh, man. You lasted so much longer than everyone else.
No, that show had its fans. I know every now and then someone brings it up as like they speak about it in hushed tones like it was this masterpiece, but I guess the audience for that kind of thing really liked it, and hey, totally fine. You know, that's totally cool if you're in that kind of thing. I mean, those shows, I sort of consider them you know, the super fan service shows or the, you know, where it's like, oh, look at this risque plot. Like, will he or won't he try to sleep with his prepubescent stepdaughter or something, you know, something like that. Those sort of like otaku sex comedies. They're kind of like junk food. Everyone's got their particular thing that they like. Like, somebody might prefer a, you know, Five Guys burger to an In-N-Out or something. And everyone's got their one thing that they like.
Man.
Well, that's kind of what it's kind of what
no,
it's like,
but
right?
I thought that comment was going to go in a completely different direction.
Oh, well, no, but it's junk food. And you sort of pick the junk food that you like and the junk food that you don't like. And everyone's got their own particular taste. And it's not really there to be totally picked apart and scrutinized, I guess. You know, I review the first episodes because it's part of the preview guide, but... Well, whatever, man. That stuff exists, and it's fine. I don't know.
Yeah.
Obviously, Theron, you'd be up a creek if they didn't turn that stuff out, man.
Well, there's some of that stuff I like. I mean, I'm okay with some of that stuff, but sometimes they go too far. Like, I don't remember the exact name of it, but there's that one, I think, in the summer last year where they had the characters going around in a, like a medieval setting where they were trying to cut off each other's breasts so they can make their own breasts larger and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You guys know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's Manyu Hikensho.
It's like, what? I'm sorry. There's I do like my fans, but then there's stuff like that. And it's like, really?
I mean, oh, man. I forgot about this show, Theron. Why'd you have to bring that up?
Well, no, my speed is more stuff like, say, the Queen's Blade.
Yeah. And hey, you give an impassioned and reasonable defense of that stuff when you do review it. So, you know, it's not like you're a nutty fan service guy who just blindly accepts everything that's got tits in it.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, at least you made a comment in a previous ANN cast, something about how there's so much fan service stuff out there that people could afford to be discerning. And I think that's absolutely true. I mean, there's good fan service stuff and there's not good fan service stuff. I think some fan service fans are not willing to admit that some of the fan service stuff just really isn't that good, even by fan service stuff standards.
Yeah, and so, well, there's also a thing where, like, that stuff does get trashed by critics, because most of the time it's not very well written. The focus isn't really the writing or the story. The focus is the fan service. And that's fine. You know, there's an audience for that stuff. And when they get so used to seeing it attacked and run down that they get defensive. And I understand that. You know, they feel like they've got to stick up for this stuff that they prefer over everything else. Totally fine. I totally get it. Doesn't mean I'm going to take it easy on it. Doesn't mean I'm going to say that something's good when it's not. But I understand that they're defensive because their shit is constantly under attack. And hey, with good cause, it's not very good, guys.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, like there's... I mean, everyone also has their own poison. Like, so this season... what is that show? Anomatsu de Natteru?
The Please Teacher remake.
Oh, the supposed Please Teacher remake?
Yeah. And, I mean, I love that kind of stuff. Like, I love Please Twins. I love Please Teacher. Like that's my poison. Like, I love shows like that. So when I watch that, like, I'm a lot more forgiving, too, of, like, you know, stereotypical characters or fan service. And I've actually been enjoying that series. Here's the thing. I couldn't tell you what the show is about because I don't remember. I mean, it's one of those shows that, in like, it's in one year out the other, like, there's an alien and then there's some cute girls, you know. But shows like that, like, I like those kinds of shows, you know, and I will defend those types of shows to the death, essentially.
Yeah, sometimes it's okay to just have fun. It doesn't have to be this big deep thing. I think that's a common misconception when critics like us tend to razz the fan service stuff, is that we're criticizing it for just being fun. No, that's not true. Something can be fun without being really, like, sort of insultingly poorly written, I think. And that's kind of my thing. But it's not like we're against fun. And I'm not personally, like, diametrically opposed to fan service. Fan service is a part of anime and has been since long before I was, you know, aware that it existed as an art form. So... you know, I'm not against it. It's just when a show is just like, hey, check out these tits. There's got to be more to it than that, man. something else. Give me something else. And I know, Theron, you're exactly the same way. You just, you know, you're willing to dive into something like Queen's Blade, whereas I've got too much other stuff, I think.
Well, and even I won't watch something like that if there's not something else there besides the fan service. I mean, I like To Love Rue because I found that show to be terribly funny, despite in addition to the fan service. So, I wouldn't have watched it if it wasn't funny.
Yeah, totally. All right, well, let's get off of the fan service stuff for a little bit. I do want to talk about sort of reviews in general, and if your perspectives have changed, because I've got a couple of things have occurred to me over the last like year or two that have changed my opinion on what makes a good review and what doesn't. And I guess I'll throw these out there, and you guys can tell me whether or not you agree. But one of the biggest things that's changed about in my estimation about like what's a good review and what's a bad review, I have discovered that a lot of reviews on the internet that are written after other opinion has been rendered. So there's already a bunch of other reviews of this thing out there, and one site, you know, the guy will get to it a little late. And the review is a reaction to the other reviews and not his own opinion. It's this sort of like, well, all these other people are saying this, but I thought this. And I don't buy that as a valid review. I don't. That's a forum comment. It's not a review. You're not writing a review piece.
Oh, yeah,
I
agree.
You're responding to someone else. But there's a lot of that out there. Like, I'm surprised. Even like professional, like, well, the few that are remaining, people get paid to review movies. You see that in there too. It's like everyone seems to be saying this, but I watched it and I thought that. And to me, not only is that not valid, it's arrogant as fuck. Like, it's really arrogant.
I think the only time that is okay is when you have a lot of popular opinion already out about a show that's been available illegally that maybe is now being released in the U.S. For example, like if you have a show, you know, that wasn't in the U.S. for a year or two and like everyone on the internet loves it, I think it's okay then to say, look, I know that people really love the show, but that's referring to like general popular opinion versus like, well, here's what I read from some other reviewers.
You know what? I would even say I'm not cool with that either. You know, we've got a prime example of that coming up with Madoka Magica, which is what they want you to call it. Magica. Jesus. that's what they want you to call that show. So Madoka is coming out. This was huge for the last year. I'm looking forward to getting the Aniplex release and watching it because I watched like the first episode during Preview Guide and said, this looks interesting. And now that it's become this huge phenomenon, I'm interested in watching the whole show. But, you know, were I to review that, I wouldn't review it from the perspective of everyone says this about this. Here's what I think. I would just review it as my opinion from sitting down and watching this show. I would remove the internet context from it because what I'm reviewing is this product, this show, not anything else. Right. You know, I mean, I get what you're saying, but again, I think that's more of a forums comment than an actual review.
I think maybe the one time when something like that might be relevant is if you're doing a review of a re-release, like something that came out like 3 or 4 years or 5 years earlier or whatever, but is back in circulation again for some reason. Like what I recently did where for Bubblegum Crisis 2040. I mean, if you're doing something like that, I think you kind of are almost obligated to at least address the issue of what's been said before about this series. Like when I brought up the bit about how there's been a long disagreement about which between Bubblegum Crisis and 2040 is the better series. Stuff like that, I think, has to be addressed in cases like that. But if you're doing something new, though, yeah, you need to keep focus on what your own opinion is on the series. That's why when I'm doing the Preview Guide entries, if I'm not the first one to do a series, I don't even look at what anybody else has written first because I don't want my view tainted like that.
Yeah, a lot of people do that. They don't read other reviews before they write their own. I don't do that. I find that other people's writing does not influence my own. But I am curious what other people said about it before I get to it. I'm curious to match my interpretation against theirs, but that's not going to change what I write about it. But I will say, like you're saying, like Bubblegum Crisis, when something's like that, where it's 10 years old, it's really well known, you have to mention the historical context. You know, if somebody were to review the Akira Blu-ray, you would have to talk about the legacy of Akira. You would have to mention how does this hold up? It's legendary, you know. Saying ignoring that and treating it like this is a thing no one's ever seen would be strange. That would be really weird. That would be a weird review. But in most cases, I would say, unless you're talking about something like that, yeah, just tell us what you think. I don't want to hear about how everyone else is saying this, but I think this, and you should listen to me instead of them. which is effectively what you're saying in a review like that. Well, they're all wrong because I think this. It's like, yeah, how about you just give me your opinion and not try to just invalidate everything that's come before. That's annoying. So there's that. That's become a big stickler. And like, if I'm looking for new reviewers and they turn in a review that is that, well, they out of the pile. I toss them out. I don't want to hear other people's reviews. I want to hear your review. The other thing I've noticed, and this is really important, I touched on it earlier. Mass consumption is a problem to the point where I think if you're consuming so much media that nothing seems special to you anymore, I'm not so sure I really want to read your reviews. Because if nothing is special, if everything is a B or a B+, what is the purpose of reading your stuff?
I feel the same way, too, about if you never give negative reviews, like, which is kind of the opposite. But also, like there, I think there's a fine line between being too jaded and then being too forgiving.
Well, either one's bad.
Right.
One's bad. But I find that just that if you consume so much of it that you don't have any passion anymore and you can see something special, but you're like, yeah, that was pretty good. All right, on to the next thing. Well, when do you get passionate? When does something really affect you? When do you have the chance to sit down and let something affect you? I guess that's sort of because, you know, there are people out there who just consume a tremendous amount of this stuff. And I wonder, like, all of their reviews are like, this happened, then this happened, and it was okay. Okay, next. And I don't find that valuable as criticism or even really as just a basic review. It's not going to tell me whether or not I'm going to enjoy it. It's going to tell me that you watched this and then moved on. And I guess a lack of passion is a big thing. And, you know, we were talking about Redline earlier. If you don't allow something to get you excited, what are you doing? Why are you reviewing stuff? Why are you writing about this stuff if nothing makes you passionate?
I agree. I think that there's also a trajectory that every reviewer goes through in which you watch so much that, like, you kind of hit a wall of anger. But I think to be a good reviewer, like, you have to move past that. You have to realize, you know, like, even though there's stuff that you may not like, you have to be able to see the good in it. You know, like there was a point in my life, like, several years ago in which I would watch something and I would just get so angry, you know, that it even existed. But now it's, like, it's a matter of, like, just kind of seeing past that. You know, and realizing, okay, well, now, like, now that I can take myself out of this situation, like, now I can view this product from a more critical perspective.
Right, or at least going into it going, okay, I know, you know, they make this kind of thing. It's not really my kind of thing, but I'm going to go into this open-minded. And,
right.
Hey, maybe it'll surprise me. You know, maybe it'll surprise me. But, you know, if you're a critic and nothing ever excites you... That I question. If everything is it's pretty good. Well, you know, what makes you excited? What makes you happy? I want to know what gets a critic. If you're a person who writes about film, writes about animation, something should light a fire under you, I guess. And if nothing ever does, I wonder why you're doing this. And if all of your reviews read that way, and I get a lot of samples from people where all their reviews read that exact way. I wonder why they're doing it, I guess. But, you know, maybe that's just me. I don't know. Theron,
that's how I would define burnout.
Yeah, when nothing makes you passionate anymore.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Nothing reminds you why you like the stuff.
Fortunately, I've managed to avoid that. I think it's partly because I don't let myself get into this crazy kind of, oh, I've got to watch almost every new series that comes out this season, I deliberately limit myself to like 3 or 4 new series each season, partly because I don't have time, but partly because, again, I know I'd be in danger of getting this kind of blasé attitude if I try to watch entirely too much of it. So
yeah, it seems like you've got your regiment down really well, because you've been doing this a long time, and I don't think I've ever seen you go through burnout.
It's a lot of it's really about pacing. I mean, and also, too, anytime I do feel starting to get a little bit kind of down about things, then I just go and pop out one of the classics that I love and go and marathon that over the weekend, and that's usually enough to get me re-centered again. So
well, you gotta be careful. I know I've certainly gone through burnout and Bamboo. I know you have, but you take on sort of these dramatic and sort of challenging almost punishing columns that require you to watch a tremendous amount of stuff. So, yeah. All right. So, I mean, did you guys have any further comments on, like, maybe how your perspectives have changed?
I think I went back and looked at some of my earliest reviews and compared them a little while ago and compared them to some of my more recent ones. I think maybe the one thing that I've changed a bit on over time is that I've started trying to put a little more perspective into what I write for reviews. Like, for example, how this series sits in the grand scheme of things, kind of thing, or like what the historical context of this series is, if it's a historically based series and stuff like that. I find myself doing that quite a bit more lately than what I did in the early days.
Huh. And do you find that it's just more satisfying to write that way, or you feel like it really helps the review?
Well, you also have to remember too that I was essentially a history major in college, so that probably just kind of comes naturally for me.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, I just find it kind of the how the show came about, or did this come from this source, or what actual historical characters are in this series. I just find stuff like that, details like that, interesting. So I like to put a little bit of extra effort in and kind of point those out in case other people find those interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's a cool approach. I like that. I think providing that kind of context can definitely help out a review, for sure. Bamboo, anything change for you?
Yeah, well, for me, I've tried to stop, essentially, like, I no longer write about stuff that isn't important to me. So, meaning, like, back in the day, you know, I felt as though I had to go through a checklist. Like, well, I have to talk about the animation, I have to talk about voice acting, I have to talk about the background, da, 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 this checklist. And then at some point, I realized that, like, if something doesn't stand out, there's no point talking about it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way that my reviews have gone, where if something really stands out to me, like if I really like something, if I really don't like something, you know, or something rubbed me the wrong way, then I'll actually talk about it. Because otherwise, if you just talk for the sake of talking, it's not fun for the writer, and it's not fun for the reader. You know, I mean, nobody cares if the animation is adequate, but it's nothing to write home about, you know? Well, then don't write about it.
I mean, it's a little harder to get away with that in, like, full-length reviews.
Right. Well, I don't have to write full-length reviews,
yeah,
so.
Right.
Yeah, I will say that that's probably, for me, the most tedious part of the full-length reviews is when you've got these series where the artistry or the animation, whatever, is just kind of ordinary, and you're just kind of stretching to come up with something to say about it that's not just totally generic. That's where reviews are actually probably most difficult for me, is when you get into those situations, you just don't really, you're supposed to say something about it, but there's just not really anything to say about it.
Mm, yeah, that's what everyone says. Hardest thing to write is the
ordinary stuff.
The C plus, the B minus, the yeah, exactly. It was okay, I guess, you know. I just want to, you know, when that happens, I just want to type one sentence that says, it's fine. That's fine. Yeah, that's it. All right, so before we get to Twitter, the other thing I did want to talk about, this occurred to me today on my lunch break. And it sort of grew out of some of the comments that I got on the Redline review, where people were complaining that there wasn't enough world building and exposition in that movie. And one of the things I said in the review is that's a highlight of that film, is that there isn't a bunch of bullshit world building and needless exposition that anime often tends to wallow in, that I am tired of, because I don't like tell, don't show. I like show, don't tell, which has been a hallmark of filmmaking, a virtue of filmmaking, the golden rule since the fucking 30s. So maybe the 20s. And now anime seems to be moving away from that. And I've noticed, like, people really criticizing it, like, oh, you know, they didn't sit there and talk about all the details about every single race on this planet and where all these characters actually came from. And I want to know the backstory of this, and how did the ship get like that? And, you know, the stuff they're asking about has nothing to do with the story of the film. Nothing. It doesn't matter. Knowing that shit would not matter one bit. The film is not confusing. It's not hard to follow. You know who the characters are, where they stand. You know who the bad guys are. You know why they're doing what they're doing. Everything makes sense. You don't need any more backstory in that movie. None. But, you know, the super fans, or the otaku anyway, seem to be saying, yeah, we totally want that in everything. And I'm wondering if you guys have noticed this too, where there is a tendency towards giant info dump instead of just showing people what happened.
So, like, one of the titles that a lot of critics and fans butted heads on last season was the first episode of Fate Zero.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. And actually, I think me and Theron actually had different opinions about this, but I hated the first episode because it was a giant info dump. And quite frankly, that kind of stuff, like, I don't really care. You know, I don't care who all the families are. I don't care about their histories. I don't care, like, you know, who got their magic spell from whom, or, you know, who has a box of whatever in their closet. Like, I don't care. To me, it's not interesting. To me, like, I want to see the characters live their lives. When I go into a movie, it's 2 hours, but I get everything I need from that 2 hours.
Generally.
You know, I don't need an info dump because I don't think it's important. If it needs to be said, it will be said, and it will come out in a natural way.
Theron?
Yeah, the first episode of Fate Zero, I mean, bothered me a whole lot less. I mean, I'm willing to acknowledge it was pretty much an info dump, but for whatever reason, I found it more involving. I mean, it helped. This was my first exposure to the Fate universe, and that it helped me get into the universe. But again, I can definitely see why people would have said that was just a big load of blah here. So I don't know. I think it depends a lot on the kind of series that you're dealing with or the kind of story that you're telling. I haven't seen Redline yet, but it sounds like for Redline, that's not one of those kind of stories where the setting is really kind of irrelevant to what's actually going on.
You know, you'll have series like, say,
12 Kingdoms, where the setting is the story.
Yeah, but
so
even 12,
it's just a matter of, I guess, what the focus is of the content.
12 Kingdoms handled exposition a lot better than a lot of stuff now. It handled its exposition much nicer, much more smoothly. There's a good way to handle that stuff. I mean, that's considered a.
Well, I think is the way I would say it, and Crest and Banner of the Stars is another good example of a series where I think it paced that very well. It progressively dumped the information out of there instead of just going blah all at once.
Yeah, and I guess my big issue with this, and the thing that shocked me most, and why the realization to this bothered me, is that people were saying that because it doesn't have that, that means it's bad, or it's uninteresting, or boring. And I would argue that, okay, so we've got this trend. You like that. You like the big info dumps. You like the exposition, the lengthy exposition. You like knowing all these little details that really don't have much to do with the actual story. It's just sort of background information that you like to know. I get that. That's fine. But we can have both, right? We don't have to say that eliminate this one and only have the other one. Like, don't shit on something that doesn't give you that if the story's told well. Just say, okay, well, this isn't that kind of thing. It's a different kind of a thing. It's not written by the Type Moon people or whatever. It's not going to tell me what exactly they decided on that particular kind of plasma cannon for this particular make of this spaceship 50 years ago when the Great Raelian War was, like, fucking, hey, that has nothing to do with anything. I understand you want to know that. Like, that's why Star Trek has those technical manuals, you know, those big books of, like, blueprints and shit. So the people that want to know that have it. It's not in the show. You know? I don't know. I maybe it's just because I just want to know what your story is about. I just want you to tell me a story. I
agree with that. I mean, I just – at some point, I feel like when you just have an infodom, like, I think that's really lazy writing. Because then you don't have to think of a creative way to tell the story. You'd be like, well, this robot's here because of – you know, who cares?
Well,
like, I don't –
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, totally. Ichihaya Furu is a good example of a show that does it good. They
right.
could have those first three episodes that are about her childhood, that could have just been an info dump, but they show us through really effective flashbacks. Effective,
right.
Heartwarming flashbacks that you really enjoy. And we
I
get
think
a,
they
yeah.
took a sorry, I think they took a risk by making it a 3-episode flashback.
Right, but by the end of that second episode, you're attached to those characters. You know, and that's important. That's quality writing. That's the way to get your exposition across. That's how you build characters. And that's why people respond to that and gravitate towards it. And that's why over generations of cinema, that technique has been embraced. It's not bad when that happens. But I don't know. I hope this isn't like a trend where that becomes the next thing that people demand to be in their shows. Like, it's already we got to have five different girls in ranging bust sizes. We got to have this type of girl, that type of girl. We got to have this character. We got to have that character. Make sure this thing is in there. And, oh, make sure that we tell, don't show. Don't show any background information. Just have a character vomited all over the screen for 10 minutes at a time. I hope that doesn't become a thing. I don't mind that they do that, but I hope that that doesn't become a thing where every show's going to have that. I really don't, because it bothers the shit out of me.
Right.
It's also possible, Zach, that you're just getting a little over-concerned about the reaction there. Because honestly, you were, let's be honest, even though you were trying to be sensible, you were pretty much gushing about Redline. And there's just some people that are going to react negatively to that whenever they see that in reviews. And they're going to look for ways to nip at the show. And when I was reading the response thread to that, and it, honestly, I was just kind of convinced that a lot of those people were just kind of looking to nitpick the show. So,
well, okay, I would not have made this observation if it were only based on that thread. It's based on a lot of other threads that I saw, not on our forums, on other forums, on Twitter. I got a lot of people pasting me links to places where people were making these same kind of statements, and not just about Redline, about other things as well, talking about how much they love that Type Moon writing style and how, you know, they want that in everything. I'm not basing it just on the Redline thing. And yeah, okay. I understand that if I give something an A+, there are people who their response to that is going to be nothing more than, no, it's not. Like, that's going to happen. I expect that. But yeah, no, I'm basing this observation on a lot of data here, not just the one thread. But no, I see what you're saying. Yeah. There's a lot of people who just want to say, no, your opinion is wrong because I don't agree with it. Yeah, we get a lot of that.
So, well, I mean, going with this whole thing that you were talking about, like, one of the things that all the fans were saying about, like, all that Typhoon stuff is that, like, yeah, well, they have to condense this into, like, you know, 24 episodes. How are they going to do it unless the info dump? And I always go back to the thing with movies. Like, somehow, really good writers and amazing directors, they can condense a whole fucking story into 2 hours. They don't need 24 hours to get. If you can't tell a story in the time allotted, then you need to think of a different way to tell the story.
Yeah, at the same time, this is, you know, that connects to the Holotaku checklist thing, where they've read the light novel, and if you don't have every fucking line of that light novel in there, they're going to get upset. That's how they were with that Haruhi Suzumiya movie. That's the reason that movie was 3 hours long, is because they had to get everything from the novel in there, or the fans would be upset.
Oh, yeah. Well, fans are, I mean, and it's not just, like, anime and manga fans, too. Like Harry Potter. Like, I think the movies are vastly superior to the books, but people don't agree because the books are more detailed.
I remember that, yeah. I mean, I'm very open-minded when it comes to adaptations. I just want it to be good. I don't care if it's exactly like the book or whatever. I just want it to be good and, you know, maintain some spirit of the original. But I remember the giant arguments over Harry Potter when the third movie came out and they left out the magical map or the backstory. Yeah, yeah. And they left out the backstory of the magical map. And people were fucking up in arms like, they've ruined this. And it's like I said, like, obviously they wrote it this way because the backstory of that is superfluous and has nothing to do with the rest of the story.
Right.
And isn't important. Like, that's the shit you cut. Naturally, you can watch all 8 of those movies. The backstory of that fucking map is never important. So there you go. That's the way you do an adaptation. Theron, you were going to say?
Well, if you go back a little bit farther, some people had the same kind of complaints about the Lord of the Rings movies.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, some people had the same complaints about the Lord of the Rings movies. So,
yeah.
So I mean, I thought they were fabulous adaptions of the book, but you still have people complain, oh, Tom Bombadil wasn't covered in the movies. It's like Tom Bombadil was a totally, almost practically little side story of its own.
Thank God that
it didn't have to do with
there.
The main plot. So
we should be so happy Tom Bombadil wasn't in those movies.
It was the stupidest part of the whole book. So just about anybody, just about most, a lot of people will acknowledge that. So it's like, why do we care if it wasn't in the movie? But so yeah, that's I agree with Bamboo. It's just that's not something that's limited to anime or manga by any means.
No,
it's,
not at all.
It's just kind of a continuation of what's gone on in other fields.
Yeah, for sure. It's, you know, attached to what we were talking about. But yeah, no, that's why they want that. That's why they cram everything in there, because if they don't cram everything in there, you risk pissing off the fans. And if you piss off the fans, they don't buy your Blu-rays. And they don't buy your Blu-rays, you don't get to make another show. So there you go. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get to Twitter, shall we? All right. Let's go with Wayne01. He asks, what is the best way each of you finds to start off writing a review? Do you start writing as soon as you finish watching, or do you let it sit for a while and think about how you'll go about writing? Bamboo, let's start with you.
I don't have a set formula. Sometimes if I really have to get something out, I'll write it. If not, sometimes I'll just let it sit for a while. I don't, you know, how I feel about a show 3 days later is going to be the same as I feel about a show 5 minutes later.
Darren?
I try to do it as quick as possible after I've seen it, because I found that if I let things sit for 2 or 3 days, then I'll start forgetting about details like how well the soundtrack worked or stuff like that. But I also don't have any set format. Heck, I sometimes will start writing a review where I'm still in the middle of watching the series. Like if I happen to notice what the extras are before I watch the final 6 episodes, I'll sometimes go and write up that paragraph about the extras right away just to get it out of the way. So this kind of really depends on what mood I am in and how much time I have at the time that I'm watching it.
Yeah, I don't write that many full length reviews. When I do, I write it right away. Often, you know, minutes after it is finished, I will run to the laptop and start writing. I try to get them done as fast as possible because that's when it's freshest in my head. The odds that I'm going to have to watch something else that's going to push it out of my brain within the next couple hours are pretty high. So as fast as possible. And frankly, I get to pick what I want to review and what I don't want to review. If I decide to write about something, it's because it struck me a certain way and I decided I wanted to write about it. And that usually happens when I feel like I have something to say. And when I feel like I have something to say, I'm driven to write, and I put my hands in the keyboard and the words come out. So that's a luxury. I get to pick and choose.
Yeah. No, I think that kind of actually brings up an interesting point, though. Now that I think about it, I think the shows that I'm most passionate about are the ones that I do tend to make the greatest effort to write quickly. And the ones that I kind of blasé about, the ones I kind of tend to let sit for a day or two just to see if something gels there that I can find interesting enough to write about. So that could be a definite factor there.
Yeah, everybody's different. When I marinate in something too long or I let it sit in my head too long, I'm never going to write about it. Like if I don't do the review in the same day, it's not going to happen. So that's sort of my policy. Bildo88 asks, I read that the former Megadeth guitarist did the instrumental for the Maritsu Space Pirates opening. What do you think of it? Well, I like the opening theme.
Yeah, it's fine.
I like the closing theme a lot more than the opening theme.
I'm not clearly remembering either one of them at this point, but I'm pretty sure I did like at least one of them.
The ending has sort of a trancey auto-tune-y kind of thing that starts it out, and I like that sort of thing. So
I'm going to have to admit, I will watch the opening theme once and then never again.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, so, I'm sure it's great. I'm sure it's fine. I don't know. I don't remember what it sounds like.
I like the closing theme on that one to the point where I will leave it on while I get up and go do stuff. when the episode is over, I'll get up and, you know, take my cereal bowl to the dishwasher or whatever. I'll leave the opening theme playing. But yeah, no, that's the first time in like a long time where I'm like, yeah, it's a catchy song.
The only one I've had for that was the opening theme of Guilty Crown, which is a shame because I don't like the show, but the opening theme is really great. So
that's the shame. Yeah. When the opening theme is the best part of the show.
Yeah.
And when it's over, you're like, oh, now I have to watch this.
I can definitely think of a few cases like that over the years. Mm-hmm. Now, as for me, if I think it's a good opener, then I'll watch it almost every time. If it's I'll watch it once and then skip over it. Like for example, with Gwyn Saga, the closer on that is phenomenal, and I watched that virtually every one of the 26 episodes in that series. Mm-hmm. But the opener didn't impress me as much, so I skipped it most of the time. So.
So Stephen Foster didn't load up the closing theme with a bunch of fart and boner jokes?
No, he left that one untouched, thankfully.
Okay. Jaron Imanich asks, is Chihayafuru still the best show this season?
God, yes.
So Bamboo says yes. At this point, I mean, if he means this season winter, I mean, I really like the pirate show, but GI Food is really good.
I just haven't seen it, so I can't comment.
What show did you expect to not like, but instead enjoyed? Good question. Spice and Wolf for me. I really thought I was not going to like that at all, and I kind of got sucked into it.
Yeah, I've heard that reaction a lot, actually, about that series, because you see a lot of people that just kind of hear the premise and said, well, what is there really to pay attention to? But then they kind of watch how the character interactions go on that, and then you just can't get away from it.
I expected it to be moe trash, and it turned out to be good. So there you go.
Well, if you want to talk about current series, I was totally shocked that I enjoy Bodacious Space Pirates so much. Fully went and expected that to be trash, and it wasn't. And it's when you have discoveries like that, that's some of the best times for people like us who watch all this stuff.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, that was based on just the title. Even the trailers pretty much told us there wasn't going to be any fan service or anything. But the title is so bad that I mean, Sentai's releasing that. I'm sure they're going to release it under that title, but it's like a tiger and bunny situation. Mm-hmm. Immediately get people to dismiss it based on the title.
Well, another series like that is, I still cannot believe that the Funimation's calling it this, Cat Planet Cuties. I mean, I love the series. That was probably the last year's example of a series, or the 2 years ago example of a series that just, I went in expecting it to be a total trash, and it totally caught me off guard with how clever it turned out to be. But then they go and give it a name like that. I mean, that's going to be my pick for the worst anime name of 2012, unless something comes out this season that surprises me. So,
well, what's the actual, like, the original English title was like Bombshells from the Sky or something like that, right?
No, if you translate the original title directly, it comes out to be something like Let's Play.
Oh, yeah, that's better.
It's worse.
It's not any better, but Cat Planet Cuties?
It just, to me, it just sounds like some sort of playset for little girls.
It's misleading. It's a title almost guaranteed to drive some people away.
Whatever, so. The cover will have big anime tits on it. They'll sell, you know, a couple thousand copies. Okay. Bamboo, anything you didn't think you'd like but you wound up really liking?
Space Pirates, actually. You know, I had a lot of... I thought I would like it ironically. I didn't think I would actually, like, for reals, genuinely enjoy it. So, yeah. Pleasantly surprised.
Biggest example for me of that recently, well, not recently, it's been about a year at this point, but Garden of Sinners, I was pretty convinced I was going to hate the shit out of that, and it wound up on my top five for the year last year.
It was on mine, too.
Yeah. All right. Desu Otaku, our friend Hope, asks, which anime that you've reviewed has your opinion of most changed over time? So something you reviewed a while ago, maybe you didn't like it so much then, and maybe it changed, or maybe you liked it then, and you don't like it now. Anything spring to mind?
Oh, Future Diary. No, Fibrain. Oh, man.
You thought you would like it and turned out to be garbage?
Fibrain. Okay. So I don't know if anyone saw this, but it was last season's show, and at first I really loved it because I was like, oh, man, here's this hilarious, wacky show about people who solve puzzles, and it's crazy. But then after, like, I hit this weird point where, like, in a night, turned to 180, and I was like, this show fucking sucks. This is terrible. And, like, from that point on, like, I just had such loathing for that show that I couldn't even watch it anymore. It was just so stupid. Like, what made me like the show at the beginning, like, ended up just being the bane of my existence. Like, why is there a whole fucking show about puzzles? Like, there's just so many questions that come to mind that show was my 180.
Well, I understand what you're saying. You were watching that week to week, though. I think she means, like, something you reviewed a while, like, a long time ago.
Oh.
And over time, like, you've revisited it. I mean, I would have to say the big example for me would be Trigun. Because I held that up as, like, hey, this is a staple. Like, you gotta watch this if you're an American who's interested in anime. Check this out. It's totally gonna blow your mind. Now I wouldn't recommend it to anybody. It'd be like, watch Cowboy Bebop and Wolf's Rain and Redline, and yeah. I would not put Trigun on there.
Like, nostalgia. That's different.
Yeah, I guess so, but that's the one I can say. Like, you still think it was great. Now I would not even recommend it to anybody. It's like, it totally shits the bed after the first, like, seven episodes, so.
Okay, I used to think that Lost Universe was the funniest show in the world. That show is pure, filthy trash. It is terrible. But, like, if you had asked me that question, like, 10 years ago, I'd be like, holy shit, this is the world's greatest show!
Yeah, I don't know.
We were so impressionable back then because we didn't have that much anime.
I don't know, man. By the time Lost Universe came out, I was capable of seeing how poorly animated it was.
I was in high school, so I thought it was fucking beautiful.
So badly animated. That show has really hideous animation. Soft X at the bottom of their powers. Theron, anything come to mind that you, like, years ago said, this is awesome, and now you're like, meh, or the opposite?
Well, it's not so much overall titles as more as certain aspects of certain titles.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I used to think that 12 Kingdoms was one of the best-looking series that I've ever seen, but I went back and watched some of the early episodes of it fairly recently here, and it's like, boy, this artwork just really, and animation just really isn't impressing me anymore. I still love the story content and everything, but there's just a certain aspects like that that just don't hold up well when I go back and look at them. There's been definitely a few grades like that I've wanted to go back and kind of change and say, no, this is probably not as good as I thought it was at that time.
Yeah, I would, you know, I could say that in terms of like aspects of a production. I could say that about the Escaflowne movie, which, I mean, you know, as a young anime fan at the Disneyland Hotel in 2000 or whatever when it premiered, I was blown away by the majesty and beauty of it all. And, oh my gosh, this is the greatest animated film, greatest looking animated film, and the animation's so great. And then I bought the Blu-ray. You know, I had the DVD over the years. I never really revisited it that much. Got the Blu-ray. Animation's kind of bad. It's kind of cheap. There's a lot of mistakes in the animation, a lot of air bubbles. It doesn't look great. It's not an ugly movie. The animation's not bad. It's just you can really see where they cut corners, and they cut a lot of corners. So, yeah, I guess that's one of those where in hindsight it's like, yeah, the art's nice. The animation itself, not great, but...
Boy, yeah. Now you're making me want to go back and watch that again just to see if I have the same reaction to it. Because I pretty much felt the same way you did when that movie first came out. But I just occurred to me that I haven't seen that rewatched that one in years. So.
Yeah, I still love it. I still really like that movie. It's a lot of fun as a fan of the TV series. It's a lot of I appreciate it as a reinterpretation. But the animation on Blu-ray, yeah, you really see the corners that they cut.
Well, how much of that, though, is your perspective changing, and how much of that is the Blu-ray, though?
Well, I mean, these are mistakes. These are motion. These are, like, low frame rate. Characters are suddenly, like, weirdly not shaded. There's mistakes in the animation that you just generally wouldn't pick up. As a young fan watching something for the first time, I think even if I popped in the DVD, I would notice this stuff now. I would notice the low frame rate and the lack of shading and the simplicity of characters in the background and what they're animating versus what they're not animating. It's not full theatrical animation. It doesn't strike me as being fully theatrically animated like you expect. It's more OVA-ish, high-end TV kind of quality. Yeah, revisit it there, and you'll see if we agree on that one. And we got a lot of Space Pirates questions, but I'll go with this. Cowboy Dev asks, any reviews you loathed having to do? Hated doing.
I'm sure if I thought about it, I could definitely come up with a few there, because there's been a few that I've looked at and said, do I really have to sit down and do that? Oh, I know. One recent one. It hasn't been posted yet, but I have a review turned in for one of the Pokemon movies.
Oh, yeah, that's sort of
sitting there. It was like Zoroaster, Master of Illusion or something like that. And it's like... I kind of was avoiding doing that for about a month. It's like, do I really have to sit down and review this? But I eventually put it in, and it actually turned out to be okay, as I suppose Pokemon movies go. But there's definitely been a few others of those over the years too. Although beyond that, I kind of be hard pressed to come up with a name off the top of my head.
Yeah, that Pokemon review is sitting there in the queue, and every time I go through to post the next couple of days worth of stuff, I look at it and I'm like, I don't know. Bamboo, anything stick out to you?
Yeah, I hate Kyo Caramel with like a burning passion.
Oh, and there was piles of it for years.
Because and that's actually, that is the title that was responsible for me eventually quitting Shelf Life.
Oh, wow.
Because I had gotten to the point where I was maybe on like, okay, because there was a dearth period there in which we would just have endless re-releases. And I think when I got the fourth re-release of Kyo Karamao in the mail, I was just like, I threw up my hands and I was like, nope, this is it. I can't do this anymore. I hate this show because it was so boring and I just couldn't watch it again for the fourth time. And it was boring to the point where I didn't remember it, so I couldn't just write about what I had already seen because it was boring. It was,
You open the box and it's like a 12-disc set. And you're like, no! Those were huge boxes. That show went on forever.
it sure did. God. Sometimes.
Yeah, the only thing that gets me is the occasional, like, if I'm the first guy to get to the obnoxious fan service show in the preview guides, there's stuff that's painful. I Kiss Sis really hurt. That hurt me. That was one of those what am I doing with my life moments. Watching Kiss Sis.
Well, and everybody knew you were going to hate that one, so.
The reason I reviewed it is because I was the first person to get to it. That's the policy. I got to stick to it. Okay. ABCB Tom asks, how does everyone feel about the Barbara Kickstarter thing? This is the digital manga Kickstarter where they've funded the publication of Osamu Tezuka's not-quite-family-friendly, super-niche comic, Barbara. I don't know if you guys have an opinion on that. I think it's great. I think it's a great way to get that stuff out there, to publish niche stuff. And if you can get people to fund it, awesome. Cool. Way to go.
I think it's a really good idea. It reminds me a lot of what Animego used to try to do.
Mm-hmm.
Although not – I mean, that didn't always pan out. But, I mean, you know, I think it's a great idea. If you want to read it, you know, give money for it.
Yeah. That's a good way for niche stuff to get off the ground. You know, something that a big publisher might not be able to justify, that kind of thing. I don't know. I am 100% on board. I think it's a good idea. Theron?
It kind of strikes me as the same kind of situation where we have some titles that are getting streamed that we know are never going to see a DVD release. I mean, there's a whole bunch of series out there that probably will never hit DVD. Cross Game will probably never hit DVD, despite how wonderful a series it is. So just the fact that stuff like that's available, at least streaming, if nowhere else, I see that as a good thing.
So you want to start seeing some Kickstarters for anime DVDs?
I think it could be an interesting idea.
Yeah, I think so too.
I mean, well, actually, there's Sentai has kind of sort of done something like that with some of these DVDs they put out where they've had like a couple of like one-shot OVAs on them that really had nothing to do with each other.
They've done that
a couple times in the past year, and that's somewhat in that direction, so...
Right. Bradley C. Meek asks, how does the gang feel about downloading DVD rips for anime that's out of print and only available for sale at absurd prices? Well, that's a personal ethics question.
I agree.
You agree with what?
I agree that it's a personal ethics question. I have no further comment other than that.
Yeah, I don't know. If you really, really are just absolutely dying to see something, and the only way you can watch it legally on a DVD is to pay $400 for it, what you choose to do with that is your own moral imperative. I guess I won't really comment further either. Bamboo, I assume you will follow suit.
Agreed.
Okay. Ted Werner, this is for me, wants to know what exactly my role was in Beckett Anime Collector. wants to know
I don't
if
I remember that one.
Yeah, it's a long time ago, man. Wants to know if I reviewed stuff. I was a freelancer for Beckett's really hilariously kind of terrible anime magazine in the early part of the last decade. It was a decent paycheck. That's what I'll say about that job. I wasn't really reviewing anything because they didn't have opinion in that magazine. Okay, Scotty415 asks, what happened with Nico Nico and their lack of simulcasting this season?
Yeah, I've been wondering about that, too.
We don't have any official answers yet. However, they announced that late last fall. Things move slowly. Who knows what their actual plans were. It's possible they didn't see anything this season that really struck them as something they absolutely really wanted to simulcast. It was a weak season. I don't know. We'll really have to wait till the spring to see what happens. If they do this in the spring where they have nothing, then we can start asking questions. But this is a new venture, so let's wait and see, guys. It's too early to make a call on that. I mean, they made that announcement at, New York Comic Con last year, so things should be moving a little faster, but it's impossible to know the exact circumstances right now. So, you know, we'll find out. But nobody knows right now, so couldn't tell you. Paul Freeland asks, in a stink burger of a season like this, can you ease off to avoid always being negative, or must you always tell the awful truth?
Telling the awful truth is fun, though.
Yeah, it's fun, and yeah, you kind of have to be honest. Just because there's a whole bunch of garbage doesn't mean you can say, well, it's garbage, but it's like, well, no, it's garbage. Or I didn't like it, rather. I'm not going to tell you I liked something or I thought something was okay or worth your time if it isn't.
Yeah, I just kind of go with the philosophy. There's usually at least a couple of good things every season, pretty much without fail. So you just kind of have to remember the bright points and kind of blank out the not-so-bright ones.
All right, this is a good question to end on. Paul Freeland also asks, ideally, what should a review do? Point out strengths and flaws, convince people to watch or not watch, find a target audience? My opinion is and always will be a review's goal is to present the author's opinion in as a well-supported, well-written, and entertaining fashion as possible. You want an honest opinion that tells you what you need to know about this thing without selling it to you or telling you that you're a bad person if you like it or whatever. It should just be your straightforward, professional opinion on something that, you know, you're being paid to evaluate. It's I want honesty and I want, it's hard to put into words exactly, but I don't want you to try and sell me something. I don't want you to tell me that if I like magical ninjas, I'm going to like this magical ninja show. I don't want you to have any ulterior motive other than to tell me exactly how you felt about this thing that you watched in a thoughtful way. That's what I want.
I completely agree. I have nothing to add to that.
I think that's a pretty fair assessment.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, you know, that about wraps it up. That was lively and a lot of fun. I really appreciate having you guys on. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, well, thanks for having us.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Bamboo and Theron for stopping on by. The theme song is Bucharest by the band The New Division. You can find them at thenewdivision.net. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, and while you're there, give us a little rating or review. We'd appreciate it. And hey, see you all next week.